Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Project Management Podcast at pm-podcast.com. We are coming to you live from the 2016 PMI Global Congress in sunny Southern California. We are in San Diego in the Expo Center here in the hallways, and with me is Joy Beattie. Hello, Joy.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yes. Your talk is Making Agile Work, Agile in the Large Enterprise. First question, have you already delivered your presentation?
I did, yes.
How was it?
It was great. We had a full room, a lot of excited people. I will say an interesting mix of the audience, mostly project managers. And what I was most intrigued by was how many raised their hand that they're doing Agile, they're trying to scale it. And then I asked, how many have been successful? And lots of hands dropped. I would say very few, actually, of the organizations represented have really felt like they've conquered the large enterprise aspect of Agile. Yeah.
So what is your personal interest in making Agile work in the large enterprise? And how is your company C-level involved in this?
Yeah, and so this is maybe a little bit different than some of the other people here. Our background is actually in the business analysis space, more so than project management. Mm-hmm. And so what we have seen over the last, particularly I would say the last 8 to 10 years, is a shift where our customers are all moving into the Agile space. And so we're bringing the business analysis, the requirements, the product management, the product ownership skills to that when we work with our customers. But as they try to scale Agile, we're seeing them fail time and time and time again. And so our company has really put a focus in understanding what are the different practices out there? What are the different frameworks? And I think the more interesting part is what works, what doesn't work? Right. Where do companies get stuck? Because I think that's where we can actually help them get unstuck. So while we do have this BA flavor to it, we've kind of broadened ourselves to work in that Agile space a bit more.
Yeah, and we've actually decided, even though we are going to take a look at the frameworks briefly, high-level overview, the main focus of our talk today is going to be about the implementations and what works and what doesn't work. But I'm first going to ask a relatively simple question, at least it's going to sound simple. I'm going to have to explain what exactly I mean. My question is, what is Agile? But it's spelled just slightly differently because we have a lower caps A, G, and an I, and then followed by an upper cap L and an upper cap E. So you spell Agile slightly differently.
We do. Yeah, I'm not sure everybody has picked up on that difference. But the idea of what we're doing here is with the word Agile, we're taking the L and the E at the end to capitalize them to stand for large enterprise.
Okay.
So somewhat just being cute about it, but let me actually address the real question there, which is what do we mean by that? I think most people are at least now vaguely familiar with the Agile Manifesto, and it talks about valuing things like individuals and interactions, that collaboration with the customer, delivering working software. Those aspects are all still very much there. But then I want to say, what does it mean when we overlay that with the large enterprise aspect of it? And by large enterprise, I'm talking, and these are just general rules of thumb, but I'm talking about more than 500 people in an IT organization or teams of, like software teams, for example, of 100 people or more. It's large. And in those situations, we're usually dealing with global, which means our teams are in different locations, different time zones, right? There's usually large corporate objectives from executives that get passed down through many layers that the Agile teams are still trying to deliver against. And some frameworks are better than others. The other thing that I see when we're talking about scaling Agile is a really diverse set of users, of the systems interacting, of the data that's maybe being passed around. So a lot more complexity comes out when we try to scale Agile beyond just kind of that one team working by themselves, or even a couple teams working by themselves. And so that's what we mean by the title of this, is really taking Agile and taking it bigger. And
into the large enterprise, into the LE.
You got it.
Exactly. So we mentioned in order to get Agile into the large enterprise, you need some kind of a framework, a scaling approach. And in your paper, you talk about four of these. Can you give us sort of a high-level overview first, and then we'll jump into these four?
Okay, yeah. So at the highest levels, and I will tell you, there are many frameworks out there that are, at least people state that they are meant to scale Agile. And I'm sure if we check back in a year, there will be many more. Like, I just feel like new approaches are out there. And So I'm not going to go through all of them by any means here. I didn't in the presentation either. The four that I covered in the talk were SAFe, the Scaled Agile Framework, the LESS, which is really very similar to a scrum of scrums, but it's large scale scrum. Then we talked about DAD, right? So the Disciplined Agile Delivery. And then we talked about Nexus. Okay, so those four are the ones that I covered. The way that I went about picking those four is really based on some studies out there. There's a Gartner study that looked at what are the most prevalently used or at least considered for being used in terms of scaling. So that's how we zeroed in on those four to discuss here. But again, there's lots of things out there. I think Spotify is a really interesting one that's gaining some attention. So would you like me to go through each of them just briefly?
Yeah, let's take a moment to discuss them and maybe see what they're used for today. SAFe.
Yeah, okay. So SAFe is one of the most complex frameworks. And so where you're going to see that deployed is somewhere where, first of all, I love it when I see there's already some sort of Agile practices in place. So it's not that we're brand new to Agile. Now we're just trying to scale the Agile. It works with any flavor of Agile. Could be Scrum. It could be Kanban. And the idea is it adds these layers. At the very top level, we have a portfolio layer that gets divided into value streams, which get divided into programs. And then below that, we have the individual Scrum teams or Agile teams. I like this framework. I will also tell you it is complicated enough and it introduces a lot of new terminology in that it is for that reason harder to adopt in an organization. The organizations that I see being successful with this are engaging full-time coaches to help them through that process.
Okay. Then we have LESS.
LESS. I like LESS. It's two layers, so that's a nice simplicity to it. It's like a scrum of scrums. So I've got scrum teams at the bottom, and I have a second layer that engages a what they call a head product owner, or maybe like a chief product owner, if you've heard that term, where there's a common product backlog across many teams, and you have that head product owner whose job it is to decide what are we going to put in an iteration, right? And then the individual sprint teams take that, they take their chunk, they go away and they implement them in their own sprints. And then it comes back together and that head product owner gets to do the final sign off on it, yes, it was done or not.
Mm-hmm. Then we have DAD.
Okay, so DAD is much like SAFe in that it can scale pretty big. And I should mention that LESS cannot. It's usually less than 10 teams that you're talking about there. DAD can scale. DAD is, I think, known for two things jump out at me as being interesting. One is that they emphasize the organizational goals throughout the entire framework. So the top is setting some goals, and we're making sure at the very bottom that we're implementing those. The other thing that strikes me about DAD is they put an emphasis on technical excellence. So you have, first of all, people who are dedicated to architecture and thinking about architecture across multiple teams, across the organization, so that we don't mess that up when we go Agile. The other thing is that they have these teams of specialists that can kind of fly in and solve technical challenge or get DevOps up and running in different ways. And so I like that aspect of it. Again, I think it works with any flavor of Agile, but you really should at least try and get a solid working Agile team in place before you try and scale with DAD.
All right. Personally, I knew about SAFe, LESS, and DAD, but I have never come across Nexus before.
Okay. Nexus is actually quite similar to LESS. Okay. In a sense, it's two layers. And so with that, there's a limitation in how much you can scale it. Okay? But, and again, it works with Scrum. What we find with Nexus is that, again, you have your individual Scrum teams. That second layer is an integration team. So this is great when you don't need a lot of teams, but you do have a lot of integration between your teams. You have an integration layer who's paying attention to where all those integration points and planning for them. The biggest difference between LESS and Nexus is that within Nexus, they still have a common product backlog across the teams, but they also use a common sprint backlog across the teams.
Okay.
So whereas in LESS, each sprint team has their own sprint backlog that they're working from. Uh-huh. In Nexus, they work off the same sprint backlog. And the point of doing that is so that they are well aware of what every other team is doing because of those integrations.
Makes sense. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So much for the four frameworks here. Get those out of the way. But now let's get into the interesting bit. Let's take a look at the scaling challenges and the suggestions that you have. So what are some of the more common challenges for large enterprises that are transforming into Agile?
Okay, right. So the common ones that are ones that we're running into, at least, are things like you've got the distributed teams. I think you had those without Agile, but Agile is so much about the close collaboration that it becomes a bigger problem to solve, is what I'll say. one of the things that I've seen in almost every single customer that I've worked with in the Agile space is the business stakeholders are not bought in. Mm-hmm. The dependencies between projects, that's a big challenge. I think things like how do we roll out Agile in terms of either executives are mandating it versus it a grassroots effort. Those things, both of those actually have significant problems when we try to scale it. Mm-hmm. This is one that when I gave the talk, I made mention that I was a little bit afraid to mention this, but I think that sometimes formal PMOs get in the way of Agile.
Oh, okay.
And so a little bit of a dangerous topic here at this conference, but it is a problem. And then kind of another one that is huge and I think probably the least solved in the industry is how do we handle funding projects? The funding models in large corporations are very waterfall.
All right. Well, let's go back to the beginning, the distributed teams. I mean, it's just a fact of life. We have virtual teams. Mm-hmm. So how do we overcome this problem?
Yeah. So, and it's everything from the communication to the language to the availability of people, right? They're on different time zones. So a couple of things that we suggest. Number one is going to be deeper grooming of your backlog. That means I am going to write more stuff down, right? I'm going to go into more depth about my user stories and my acceptance criteria because I'm not sitting next to that person who needs to maybe do the work. And I'm also going to want to do that grooming a little bit more ahead of time. So typically, I would say something like 1 to 3 iterations ahead of when it's going to get implemented is when I'm going to want to go into depth so that I have time to get into the depth and get some of those questions worked out. I think that when we do our sprint or our iteration planning sessions, we need to spend more time on those. Mm-hmm. So what maybe would normally take 2 hours, we're going to spend 4 hours or even 8 hours as a team working through that. And then there's some soft skills, right? As a team with everybody who's distributed working together, decide how are you going to work together? How are you going to do meetings? How often are you going to talk? How do you get a hold of each other in the middle of the night when you absolutely need someone? Are we going to use chat, mm-hmm. you know, tools, things like that? So just it's a collaborative effort, not just to do the work, but to actually decide about the process mm-hmm. itself.
And I think when you do planning meetings across distributed teams that take 4 to 8 hours, it's probably a good thing not to try and do everything on the same day.
That's exactly right.
Because mm-hmm. frankly, I can only sit at my computer and stare at the screen and moving videos with other people for so long until I get disengaged.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And one of the other things I think it's nice if you have distributed teams is to figure out if you can get everybody in the same spot, at least for a short spurt of time, right? And maybe you use that time to do a planning session. You won't be able to do that every couple of weeks, but it would give you at least a chance to build some camaraderie on the team while also doing some planning together and figure out how much time do we need as a team to do this kind of thing.
All right. And then I think the second item you talked about were the stakeholders. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. So I have found lots of fantastic Agile classes out there. I think the bulk of them focus on the technical teams, the implementation teams, maybe the product owners, the scrum masters, but they neglect the space of business stakeholders. And I get that the product owner often comes from that group or maybe should come from that group. They often don't though, but you have all these stakeholders who have requirements, who need things built and they don't get training. And so I've got many examples of, one of my favorites is a customer of mine on the business side who said to me, "Joy, I am so sick of the development team. They're doing Agile now. Why are they doing this to me?" And I was looking at her thinking, that is such an interesting perspective because they're doing it for her, but she had no idea, right? This is all about how do we get her products delivered more successfully, right? More predictable outcomes for her. We get things to market faster. But in her mind, Agile was being done to her, not for her.
Oh.
Right? And it's not her fault. Nobody had ever explained it to her. They never educated her on this process. And so when I think about what do we have to do with business stakeholders, we've got to get their buy-in. And the best way to do that is educate them. And it doesn't have to be formal training classes. It could. But a lot of it is just communicating with them about here is our process. Here's why we're doing what we're doing. Collaborate with them. Get their ideas and to make the process better. And then just being persistent about it. Like you've got to keep going and know that there's going to be hiccups and they're going to get frustrated, but work through it. Don't run away. Don't back off of it. Don't make them mad so that they back off of it. But really, again, it's some of those softer skills, I think, that come out there. But you've got to get them engaged in the process so that they understand what the value is. And then once you get some quick wins under your belt with them, they'll start to believe in it.
Right.
They'll
so
see the value.
Go back to the basics, really. Get the agile values across, mm-hmm. get the promise and the benefits of agile across so that everybody speaks the same language and sees where we're heading here.
You got it. Exactly.
Yeah. Next one, I believe, dependencies between teams. Was that it?
Yeah. So this is where I see this breakdown. There's different ways dependencies can kill an agile deployment. But one of the key ones is when a company is making the transition to agile or scaling their agile. Inherently, that means some teams are in agile and some are not. And it could be waterfall or it could just be something other than agile, right? And the dependencies between those teams are tricky because if I'm an agile team, I need functionality from my waterfall team, let's say, but they're not going to have it done for 6 more months. Well, how do I demonstrate full end-to-end functionality? How could I have a releasable product when the thing I'm integrating to isn't even remotely close to done? Or the flip side of that, I'm a waterfall team and I like to do this full in-depth plan, but the agile team doesn't want to plan that far out, right? So those things kind of...
How can I know how to integrate with them if they are not even done with the initial sprint?
And one of the suggestions I have, this is going to sound very anti-agile to some of the agile purists out there, but I feel like you can create what we would call an agile requirements document. And it's not an in-depth spec by any means, but it's some high level. Here's where we anticipate there being some integrations and enough detail about those that each team can get a perspective on what's coming. And then a colleague of mine at C-level came up with the term rocks in a river, that the idea is when I'm looking at my whole product backlog, I know there's these points where I have to integrate. I treat them like rocks and I drop them into my backlog. And just like rocks in a river, they don't move. They stay there and everything else flows around them. So I can have a rock in a particular release. And if I want to move some other piece of functionality into that release, well, then I have to move something else out so that that rock can stay there because there's another team depending on me to get that rock done in that particular release. So.
Okay. From here, we move into and I think we have to lower our voices now, PMO, right?
Oh, no. I was looking around. I'm like, who's here? No. Yes.
So nobody hears us. So PMOs can be a problem at all?
Yeah. So, and I definitely am seeing this evolve. So I don't mean to by any means stereotype all the PMOs out there for anybody who's listening. But what I see with PMOs, historically, they like detailed plans. They like release deadlines. They like gate processes.
They like earned value.
They like control, right? The thing is, all those things I just named are very, very opposed to what Agile is about. And so I have been in situations where literally the PMO has said, I must have approval on requirements before we move forward. Well, that's not Agile, right? And so we've gotten up some very non-perfect answers to how we get sign-off, but it's only sign off on a sprint's worth of work or something like that. So there's ways you can play that game until the PMO wants to catch up. But more importantly, again, I think it's about educating the PMO and helping them see, okay, this is how Agile works and how Agile is going to deliver better value faster. And so it's things like instead of having the detailed plan, they get to have a prioritized backlog. And we know the most important things are on the top of that backlog, right? We teach them about minimal viable product. What is the very basic minimum thing that we can release and get out the door. So I can't guarantee what I'll have done in a particular end date, but I can tell you I'll have the most important things done first by that end date. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that, and I think the audience here particularly latched on to, because again, I was talking to mostly project managers, is it's less about command and control, and it's really more about the PM, the PMO playing an advisory or facilitator role in the Agile process. So they can help figure out what process does work and where is it not working and help get teams past those stumbling blocks, because every Agile team's different. Every process is going to be a little bit different. Well, the PMO can kind of shift their role and add huge value in that particular space.
You know what I find interesting about this PMO discussion is that the PMO is usually the driver behind what methodology, what framework are we using in our organization. Right. So you would expect the PMO to be aware of these nuances between plan-driven and iterative and adaptive project management methodologies, agile and waterfall, basically. And they should realize that these don't necessarily match 100%, and we have to adjust our expectations here.
Yeah.
And you still find that the PMO implements Agile and then they stand in their own way?
So interesting the way you phrase that. So I think it's changing. I will tell you that normally when I see Agile being rolled out in an organization, it is not the PMO driving it. It is either an executive, like a CIO, uh-huh. who's saying, we're going to start using Agile in our development organization. Everybody else follow along. Or it's individual teams that are thinking, wow, I want to do Agile. Just like kind of fun, and they get excited about it. Oh, and by the way, it adds value too. And so it gets rolled out in these two different ways, not a PMO driving it.
Okay.
And so the PMO is playing catch up. Now, again, I think that that is changing. And I particularly, even just this year at Congress versus last year at Congress, I see a lot more PMs who are saying, I'm working on projects that are Agile. So that's a sign to me. It's anecdotal, but it's shifting. So it's not that we see as much resistance from PMOs, but I think that's why we still get some, is that they weren't bought into the decision to move to Agile.
Okay. Finally, I believe we have the funding to talk about.
Yeah. This is one of the biggest problems and one of the hardest to solve. All right. I almost want to say, in a lot of large organizations, now we're talking about CFOs have to get involved mm-hmm. in how we dish out money. So the issue is that, you know, in Waterfall, executives say, here's a budget. I want to know what I'm going to get for that budget. Mm-hmm. And they want answers. The problem is, and this is the thing, Waterfall gave a false confidence around, yes, I can tell you the scope you're going to get for a budget. The thing is, if you need a fixed budget and a fixed scope, you shouldn't be doing Agile. It doesn't work. Absolutely cannot work. You need to have a trust between your implementation teams and your executives about, okay, we're going to get this budget and we're going to implement the most important things first. And here's some idea of where we'll be at the end of that budget. And as we get closer, I will be able to tell you more specifically where we're going to land. But up front, absolutely impossible to do it. And so there's a couple ways I think that you can handle this, that there's for teams that are new to Agile, particularly executives that are new to Agile, typically we see them end up using a fixed budget where it's a smaller budget. Okay. So they're giving out a little bit of money and the agreement is that the team is going to work on the most important features first with that budget. And it helps them see and learn how does this work. More advanced teams actually move into more of a continuous funding model. I don't see this very often because the comfort isn't there yet, right? That we can actually deliver successfully. But the idea is that, you know, your technical teams or your delivery teams are really prioritizing. They're still prioritizing what's most important first, and they're getting additional funding as they go to say, okay, well, here's what's next most important. Are we going to pay for it or not? And
okay, so that's what the continuous funding model is all about. You have a basic a budget, you deliver, and then, okay, we see value in this. Here's 100,000 more. Keep going until at some point we'll say, you know what? That's it. We're done.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is what it is. I will tell you, though, generally speaking, I don't see a lot of organizations using that yet.
Yeah. It sounds like a very daunting thing to just go, yeah, here, take the money, go somewhere.
Right. Yeah. I have an example story real quick that, one of our customers right now is the business stakeholders are saying, here's my budget, here's my deadline, and here's my minimum scope. I have to have it by this particular deadline. And in this particular case, they're in the banking industry. And when this deadline is a real deadline. On that particular deadline, they start incurring daily fines that are huge. What's interesting is they want guaranteed that they will have their scope by that date. Waterfall doesn't guarantee that. I mean, it may say it does, but it doesn't. Agile doesn't guarantee it either. What it says is, let's take your scope. Let's figure out what's most important first. Let's build it. And then we'll build the next bit. And we're going to keep going so that we know we've built your most important stuff. And it's interesting. So Agile would help them here. Because 6 months from now, when their deadline comes along, if we haven't built in everything that they said they had to have, and they have a choice between, do I release what is done, knowing it's the most important stuff, or do I start incurring a daily fine? Well, of course, they're going to release what they have. And Agile is building product in a way that they can, in fact, release it at that point. So it's a win, yet people just aren't comfortable with it yet. Mm-hmm. So it's hard. It's hard to digest that.
Okay. So to repeat, we had the distributed teams. We had the stakeholders. We talked about dependencies between teams. We talked about the PMO very, very quietly. And of course, then there is the funding as well. Where does C-Level take it from here? How do these findings help you with your customers to make Agile work in the large enterprise?
Great question. I think that for us, a big part of it is we continue to experience these challenges with our customers and hopefully get them past these challenges. I feel like this is a space that is evolving rapidly. It's agile for, you know, lack of a better word, right? And so for us, like, that's where the path is. I think that we come from that business analysis, the requirements space. So we tend to work very tightly with the product owners. The product owners, one of their top responsibilities is around prioritizing what is most important first. So that is where we will continue to grow our own methodologies in that particular space, all the while trying to help with some of these, a lot of it's softer skills again, like how do I really just educate people and help them understand? Do I hear them? Do I understand what their concerns are and to get past those?
Mm-hmm. We also talked about the fact that Agile oftentimes doesn't get implemented from the PMO, but it may be maybe a grassroots effort from one single team, one single project manager and his or her team bringing it into the organization. What recommendations do you have for our listeners? Because many out of there, they may want to try Agile in their own organization, but, you know, they're faced with the fact, well, we don't use Agile.
Yeah.
What can they do?
Yeah, and here's the thing I'll tell you. Honestly, I think it's great. Grassroots efforts are perfect for a team. And by a team, I mean less than 10 people. That's the classic Agile teams, 7-ish people. I think that's great to go figure it out and make it work. But at some point, you're going to have to take it up the ladder and get executive buy-in. And the reason for that is you can't scale via grassroots efforts because you will end up with different teams all doing it differently, and then they don't work well together. And at some point, you're very likely going to need executive support to fund part of your Agile transition. And it could be in the form of training. It very likely could be in the form of coaching. But the idea is really, you can do it to an extent on your team, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's all you need. But if you really want to make a change in the organization, it's going to require some buy-in higher than that.
At the end of your presentation, I'm pretty sure there were at least one or two people who came up to you and had a few questions. What did they ask you?
Oh, that's a great question. I had a lot of questions after.
I know. That's why I said sort of tongue-in-cheek one or two questions.
Yeah, and they were ranging from... it was interesting to me. Some of the questions were specific to frameworks. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I think that's interesting is, what do we do with Agile in the portfolio management layer? So I didn't really talk a lot about that in the presentation, but that's a real struggle that PMs or portfolio managers even, right, are having, where what do we do here? And I think it's doable, right? In fact, SAFe is one of the frameworks I would recommend if your organization is mature enough where you're doing Agile and you're trying to scale it up to the point you're worried about your portfolio and how do I handle that in an Agile world. And so SAFe comes in and looks at what is the value of these different efforts and prioritizes, right, according to those. So loved that. I think that was an interesting topic. I had some questions just even more fundamental, which there was one interesting one around, I have a consulting company, so we have clients. We do implementation and we want to use Agile. How does that work, right? Because I don't have a product owner on my team. My customer's really my product owner, right?
How do you tell your customer how much the project is going to cost?
Right. That's exactly right. I think the Agile space with vendors is a very interesting topic that we could probably explore for another half hour, right? But in this particular suggestion I gave to her, isn't perfect, but my suggestion was you have somebody in your own organization who is representative of a product owner. They need to play the product owner role because they need to be sitting with the developers day in, day out, helping make prioritization decisions. Mm-hmm. And that person needs to be in lockstep with your customer. So they need to be meeting with the customer frequently, talking with them every day. So they are going to represent the customer's priorities inside your own organization. They're doing it whether they're Agile or not today. Like, you have to do that to be successful as a vendor, right? But it's almost just bringing awareness to that needs to be their primary job. Understand the customer's priorities because you're going to come back and represent those within your own company. But again, it's a very tricky thing, and particularly around the contracts, right? Because Agile's really not, contracts and negotiation, that's on the we value those less side of the manifesto, right? So...
At the end of your presentation, what was your conclusion? What was the message that you gave to the participants that you sent them home with that we can now also give to our listeners?
Yeah, so I had two common themes. One is that I really wanted to make sure they walked away with collaboration as a key word in their heads. That, and I don't mean just that collaborating on the projects themselves. I mean collaborating to figure out how are we going to make Agile work? How are we going to make Agile scale, right? That needs to be a team effort so that everybody's bought into what's going on. The second thing that I shared was, don't be a purist. Don't be an Agile purist. And I joke because I don't even know what an Agile purist is, right? There is no, like, the manifesto is about guidelines and suggestions, not about this is what we will do. There are people out there who have interpreted the manifesto into what they call Agile purism, right? And my suggestion is don't even get that in your head that there's a right or wrong answer here. Because every organization is different and every organization has its own personality and its own culture. And so as we try and bring in Agile and then scale it, we're going to have to shift into those spaces to figure out what works for our organization as we scale.
Excellent. Joy, thank you so much for having been on the program.
Thank you. This was fun.